good to have you with us this morning. We changed gears last week. If you're like most people, you were sick and tired of crisis talk, of pandemic talk, of all the things that are being wrapped around it, both political and otherwise. And so we began this short little series that hopefully will carry us almost through the end of this about some lesser known stories from the Bible, stories that a lot of people have never heard, or if you've read them, you've never really thought hard about them. So we're calling it Unusual Encounters is kind of the title of it. And last week, we looked at the story from Acts 20 about this young man named Eutychus who fell out of the window during this late night service. He fell to his death, and there was this amazing miracle and kind of what all that signified. And if you haven't listened to that sermon or taken a view of it, go back, take a look at that. But today, we're going to go back almost 1,000 years before Eutychus to the heyday of the Israelite nation. And I want to look at a gentleman named Elisha. And so before we do that, let me pray for us this morning, and then we'll jump right in. Lord, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for each person that is tuned into this. I pray that you would tune us into your Holy Spirit in the same way that you we tune into this broadcast, that we might hear what it is you have to say. And so I pray that you would speak to us in the midst of all this. Amen. There's a story from the old Soviet Union of a time when there was this wave of petty theft in this certain area of the country, and the authorities, they just couldn't get a handle on it. So what they did is they decided in this area they were going to put guards around a whole bunch of factories that were where they were the problem. And at one particular timberwork factory in Leningrad, the guard happened to know the workers in the factory pretty well. And the very first evening they were guarding, out came Peter Petrovich, and he had this wheelbarrow, and in this wheelbarrow he had this great bulky sack, a very suspicious-looking object inside. And the guard said, "All right, Peter, you got to stop. What have you got there?" And Peter said, "Well, it's just sawdust and shavings." And the guard said, "Come on, I wasn't born yesterday. Tip it out." And so, so Peter tipped out his wheelbarrow, and sure enough, it was just sawdust and shavings. So he was allowed to put it back in the wheelbarrow and go home. And then the same thing began to happen every night of the week. And the guard began to get frustrated because he knew Peter had to have been smuggling something. And finally, his curiosity overcame his frustration. He says, "Look, Peter, I know you. Tell me what you're smuggling out of here, and I'll make sure you don't get into trouble." And Peter looked at him and said, "Wheelbarrows, my friend, wheelbarrows." The guard was so consumed with one thing that he missed the obvious. And this is so easy for this to happen in our lives. We get distracted by things that take us away from what we're supposed to be doing. And it can happen at work. It can happen during a movie. It can happen while we're on our jobs. It can even happen in the middle of a conversation where you're talking to a person. You know how they start to look away and they're looking over here while you're talking to them. And you notice they're completely distracted from what you're saying. Distractions. As we look at Elisha this morning, I want you to keep this question in mind. This is the question that I kind of want you to be in the back of your mind is, what is the biggest distraction that you have from living life the way Jesus desires you to live life? What is that biggest distraction? So there's a story that stuck out in my head from the life of Elisha, a story that I loved as a child. And it's the kind of story that anyone who's ever been an underdog or ever been bullied at the hands of another person, they love this story, okay? It's from 2 Kings chapter 23. So if you're in the Old Testament, it's this book called 2 Kings, and it's really just three little verses starting at verse 23. And here's how it goes. From there, Elisha went up to Bethel. So Elisha's traveling along this road from Jericho to Bethel. He's a fairly a new prophet. And as he's walking along the road, some boys came out of town and they jeered at him. "Get out of here, Baldy," they said. "Get out of here, Baldy." Now, Baldy, or bald head, it depends how you translate it. It could have either been a form of personal scorn and derision because boldness was actually very undesirable in that culture. It was even used as a sign by God of judgment in a lot of cases. Or it could have been worse. They might have been referring to undesirables because like lepers and people like that were told they had to, they were required to shave their heads. And so we're not sure why, but they were saying these things. And it kind of brings to mind that whole day. Have you ever been teased? I mean, have you ever been made fun of or mocked by other people? I mean, as I've shared before, I was teased and mocked a lot when I was younger. I was either too small, too pimply, too goody two shoes, not cool. I mean, take your pick. I encountered all of those. And if any of you out there have been on the receiving end of that kind of teasing, you know that they can kind of create scars for your life. And there were many times when that happened that I just wanted to see those people who were teasing have something bad happen to them. So in this particular story, let's see what happens next. So they're jeering at him. They're calling him Baldy. And here's what happens starting in verse 24. He turned around, looked at them, and called down a curse on them in the name of the Lord. And you're thinking, okay, well, that sounds interesting, but what happens? And here's what happened. Then two bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 of the boys. And he, Elisha, went on to Mount Carmel and from there returned to Samaria. Okay. There is something deeply satisfying about that story if you've ever been bullied. There's a sense of kind of like, yes. Ah. But at the same time, is there anything in that little story that troubles you? I mean, doesn't it seem like Elisha's a little bit vindictive, a little bit sensitive maybe? And then there's this whole idea that he called down a curse in God's name, and God appears to go along with the curse. Isn't that kind of mean, maybe even despicable? Well, let's leave all those questions hanging for a little bit. We're going to come back to this. Because as I thought about it, I thought, well, the story itself by alone doesn't really make sense. And it made me go through the rest of the story of Elisha, as recorded in the Bible, to try and get a broader sense of what's going on. So let me give you a little bit of background. Elisha was a prophet in Israel for over 50 years, which means he had a really, really long ministry. And who was Elisha? Well, Elisha was the successor to Elijah. Okay, very similar names. And Elijah was considered one of the most powerful prophets in the history of Israel. We actually talked about him a couple months ago when he confronted the king and queen of Israel, and he had this big event, and he had to run for his life. And Elijah did all these miraculous things. He raised a child from the dead. He called down fire from heaven. And it was all in an effort to bring the nation of Israel back to God because they had walked away and stepped away from God. And then God told him, I want you to groom your successor. Elijah, you're not going to be here forever. And so he said, I want you to pick Elisha as your successor. And he did. And when he reached the end of his life, Elijah did, he was taken to heaven in a whirlwind, this amazing thing, one of the few people who never actually died and went straight from this earth into heaven. And Elisha now becomes the main spokesperson to Israel. And the situation is not good. The nation of Israel is still a divided kingdom, north and south. Elisha's in the north, and there's this whole series of wicked and evil kings, and it just wasn't getting better. I mean, the people were led to move further and further from God. These evil kings actually took them in the wrong direction. And not only did they not follow God and live against the law of God, they increasingly turned towards the local god. God's name were Baal, who was the god of fertility and harvest. And so the people were making idols, and they were sacrificing to Baal, and they were increasingly rejecting the real God in the middle of all this time. And Elisha is dealing with kings who don't lead well, a people who have no desire to follow, and a very small group of people who want to follow Jesus the way they're supposed to. And so as I began to look through it, I mean, I encourage you to read this. There are a whole bunch of crazy stories about Elisha. Let me just give you a few of them. One time, there was a city where water from a major spring had gone bad. It was now such that the water was killing crops instead of watering them the way it was supposed to. And it was undrinkable, unsustainable. The city was in trouble. The whole city was at risk. And so Elisha says, they're crying out. Elisha says, hold on. Bring me a bowl, brand new bowl, never been used. And he put salt in the bowl, and then he threw this into the water, which typically you would think salt doesn't help water, it makes water worse. But in this case, the water cured the water, the salt water cured the water and made it good in perpetuity for the rest of time. And the whole object lesson behind it was that Elisha was saying, like, he's the new bowl, he's the new prophet. And the salt, which was through all of Israel's time symbolized preservation and purity, basically called the people away from the unproductive alliance to another god because they were spiritually barren. It wasn't helping them, just like the bad water, and saying, you need God's power and preservation to come back because he can heal your spiritual barrenness, something Baal could never do. Now, if that's not weird enough, there was another time, there was a famine in the land, and Elisha came to a place where there was this whole school of prophets. They were meeting, and they wanted to have a feast, and he wanted to make this large, and they wanted to make stew, Okay, so this is an easy way to feed a lot of people. And it was a famine, so apparently there's not a lot of food. So one of the prophets goes out, and he's just picking vegetables or something from the area around him, and he puts in the stew, and what they find out is that not only did it wreck the stew, it made the stew uneatable and maybe even harmful or fatal. And so they cried out, what are we going to do? And Elisha says, hold on, give me some flour. And even though flour would have been in really short supply, and he throws it in the pot, and the food immediately turns edible and nutritious. Again, it was a lesson to the people saying, hey, you're spiritually hungry, and you're going to things that look good on the surface, like this prophet Baal, and it has nothing for you. You need the spiritual nutrition of God himself. All right, that's cool. There's another time that a man brought his offering to Elisha, and it was some barley bread baked from the first fruits of the grain. So this guy was actually following the law of God. He was bringing his first stuff to Elijah. And Elijah said to his servant, hey, take this bread this guy brought, and let's feed everybody. And his servant said, look, there's just a few loaves of fish here. How can I set all this before 100 men? There'll never be enough food. And Elisha's response, tell me if this sounds familiar. He says, give it to them, because not only will they eat their fill, but there will be a bunch left over. It's very similar to something that happened about 1,000 years later. But God is, again, he's showing, hey, look, I'm in charge of this. I can multiply the limited resources you have. Baal doesn't have that kind of power. The distractions, the things you're going after, don't have what I have. And then, just to prove that God was supernatural and he could provide for the needs of the people, there's this other really curious story that I thought about doing this morning, but I decided to land where we did, where the prophets, the people that were following God, they're meeting together. They're building a new building because they're running out of room because people are starting to come and follow God a little bit. And a guy is chopping down trees, and he has this iron axe head, very valuable because iron wasn't like today. You couldn't just go down to Lowe's and buy an axe. And he's chopping the tree, and as he goes in his backswing, you know, the head flies off into the Jordan River. And the guy panics because he's like, I borrowed this axe. This isn't mine. What am I going to do? I can't afford to replace this. And Elisha said, relax. Where did it fall in the river? And the guy shows him where it fell in the river. And he takes out a twig, a branch, and he throws it in the river. And the second he throws it in the river, the axe head, iron, floats right to the surface, right where the man could reach in and take it out and be able to give it back to his owner. Amazing. And we don't have time to talk about the time that Elisha raised a widow's son from the dead, foiled an enemy kingdom's plans by knowing everything they were supposed to do ahead of time, or how he saw chariots of fire from God, or how he parted the Jordan River, or how he healed leprosy. All amazing things. And maybe in one of the quirkiest stories in Elisha's life, in one last crazy hurrah, he did a miracle after he was dead. Because some men, after Elisha had died, we're going to bury somebody. And as they were going to bury him, they saw these raiders, these Moabite raiders coming in. And these were people that would raid, they would kill, and they would take all your stuff. And they panicked. They were like, we don't want to get caught by these raiders, and we're supposed to bury this guy. So all they did was they picked the nearest tomb, and they took the man, and they just threw him in, and they ran. Well, they happened to pick Elisha's tomb. And as soon as the dead man's body hit the bones of Elisha, he came back to life. Crazy. The miracle certainly got back to the king as a sign to both encourage him, hey, trust God, he's powerful, and maybe a rebuke for his lack of faith. So, throughout his entire ministry and all these weird stories and amazing miracles, God was using Elisha to train the next generation of prophets to trust God and to call the entire nation to stop being distracted and trust God and follow him. And he empowered Elisha and gave him these amazing miracles because he wanted the people to not dismiss Elisha. He says, when he talks, I want you to listen because he's telling the story and he's saying the words of God to the people. Okay. With all that in mind, let's go back to the original story. And here's how it goes again. So from there, Elisha went up to Bethel. So remember, he's a brand new prophet, and he's walking along the road. Some boys came out of the town, and they jeered at him. Get out of here, Baldy. They said, get out of here. Now, what's interesting is they're not just making fun of his bald head. They're using this really interesting phrase saying, get on out of here. And what it really was, it could be, and by the way, these are youth. These are not children, okay? So these are young men Okay. They could actually conceivably even be false prophets of Baal by their behavior, but we don't know that for sure. But they weren't just scorning Elisha for his bald head. They could also be talking to this idea that Elijah, his predecessor, had gone up to heaven, right? He'd been taken up in a whirlwind and Elisha replaced him. And it's like, hey, Elisha, why don't you go where Elijah went? We don't need you. Why don't you go? If you're really a prophet, why don't you go? We're fine without you. Get on out of here. The bottom line is, they were regarding the prophet of God with contempt. And then we see this. He turned around, Elisha turned around, he looked at them, and he called down a curse on them in the name of the Lord. And you have to understand, this curse was not a defensive response. It wasn't in pride about his appearance. It wasn't any of that. It was Elisha saying, you don't get the luxury of disrespecting God in this, as you're treating the person that he's appointed as spokesperson. You don't get to do that. And so then God responds and says, two bears came out of the woods, mauled 42 of the boys, and he went on to Mount Carmel and returned to Samaria. Now, I don't know if you caught this earlier, but the fact that there were 42 of them that got mauled suggests that this was not a small crowd. This was not just a couple of kids who were bored, throwing sticks, saw a bald guy, and started to make fun. All the indications are that this was a larger demonstration. These are people who knew Elisha was coming and said, you know what? We don't need him. We don't need his God. We need him to get out. And you know what, guys? Just like you've seen in demonstrations around here, let's get together and let's face him down. So this is not an irritated or vengeful God that's doing this. What God is really doing here, he's telling the people, pay attention. Listen to what Elisha has to say. He's calling you back to me. This is not a laughing, casual matter. You keep dismissing me and trying to find satisfaction where there's no satisfaction to be found. You're chasing idols and you're putting your energy into the pursuit of everything but me. You're going with what everyone else is saying and doing and what's easy over what is best. Israel, you are distracted and I'm trying to get your attention. Are you listening? You know, that's the sad part of this. The Israelites, for the most part, did not listen. They continued to pursue every alternate form of comfort, entertainment, and worship that was convenient for them. And less than 100 years after Elisha, Israel as a nation, the entire northern kingdom was conquered and ceased to exist and never came back. Kind of puts the story into perspective, does it not? And really, that's the question that I kind of wanted to settle on with you today. Because God wants to get our attention. He's not a mean, angry God who's trying to make your life difficult in some way, shape, or form. He's not trying to be mean. He's not trying to be the kind of God who just pokes you. He's not out, you know, to stir up the anthill just because that's what he can do. But what he does know is that just like the Israelites, sometimes we need our attention to be jogged and to be brought into focus. So maybe this is something we should consider. And this is the question. I saw that Bryce put it up. I wanted to put it up again. It's simply this. How might God be trying to get your attention? As we sit here today, 10, 11 weeks into this quarantine, looking at the horizon, seeing things hopefully coming back to normal, dealing with the economic fallout, the personal fallout, the I miss people or I still want to get away and be by myself, whatever it is, there's crisis going on in the middle of this. What is God saying and how might God be trying to get my attention? See, whenever something bumps up against your preferences, make a habit of asking God, okay, God, you're trying to get my attention. What are you doing? Because it's so easy to be distracted and to turn to everything else but God, to bury ourselves in entertainment or other things or food or whatever things that pop in front of us to make us feel better in the moment. And we're trying to go for a distraction. God's saying, hey, 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 look up here. Pay attention. C.S. Lewis said this. He said, pain insists upon being attended to. Let me put it up here. You can go ahead and put it up, Bryce. I just hadn't moved it. Pain insists upon being attended to because God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks in our consciences, but he shouts in our pains. It's his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. You might remember that quote. We did it at the beginning of our last series. But I loved it so much, I thought we'll put it up again because God is trying to get our attention. And sometimes it's in really small ways. It's a whisper. It's a quiet thought. It's a prompt from him. And sometimes it's loud, like two bears coming out and mauling a bunch of kids. In both cases, he's trying to get our attention. That's question number one. How might God be trying to get your attention? But it brings me back to the question that we began this whole thing with today. Okay? As God is getting your, trying to get your attention, then I would ask you this question then. What is your biggest distraction from living life as Jesus desires? What do you find yourself turning to find comfort, joy, fun? Where do you find your comfort in this life? Are you letting God get your attention? Or are you letting distractions preventing you from embracing him? Does God have your attention? Let's not ignore his voice. Or worse, let's not show contempt for his voice by doing our own thing and chasing everything but him in the midst of our life. Let's listen and let's follow.